Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Do you like Sheffield Live? Why not become a friend of Sheffield Live? Sheffield Live is a community radio station, and friends of Sheffield Live are people in the community who make a regular donation to keep Sheffield Live on the air. Join the Friends of Sheffield Live by writing to friends@sheffieldlive.org or go online to sheffieldlive.org/friends.
Hello, good evening. Here we are again. It's Wednesday night live in Sheffield. We're on Deserted Island Discs. It's a bit of a different show tonight. We've had a last minute cancellation. So usually every week we have a guest who was born in Ireland and now lives in South Yorkshire. But thankfully for me and you listeners, dear listeners, we've got my lovely Uncle John in the studio. He's in Sheffield visiting, and he's usually a man that has full of stories and laughter. So, hi John, how are you doing?
Oh, only brilliant.
Oh, of course.
How's your good self?
I'm sure you're not going to let me down tonight.
Oh, absolutely
not. Give you the big build-up.
Yeah.
Yes. But we are going to follow the same format as the Deserted Island Disc, which is talking about your life growing up, your childhood, and then you've picked some songs that kind of, punctuates the evening with songs and gets through the hour. So I'm sure the hour's going to go really, really quick. I'm really looking forward to this, Uncle John.
Oh, me too. Now, for those purists that might think I'm not Irish, let me tell you that although born in Manchester, which is admittedly in England, both my parents are Irish, probably going back loads of generations. Dad was born in Dublin and my mother Acklesound, Mayo. So, and I did explain, or should explain, that I once lived in Sheffield. Almost 3 days. I was here at a festival some 5 years ago. So having Irish blood in me and birth an accident of geography, being in Manchester, that's why I think I qualify.
You can qualify tonight. Yeah. Thank you. And it's our show. And the station owners and the people that run this lovely Sheffield Live have given us permission to break the rules on this one occasion.
Oh, I love breaking rules, but not occasionally, loads of times.
You do. So we try and start about talking about your early life, John, and some of your early memories. So quite significant that people may know. You were born in Heaton Park, where those other Irish people, the Gallagher's Oasis, recently played in Heaton Park.
Yeah.
Irish Mancunians. So you were born in a park, weren't you?
Born in a park. Actually born in a hospital, but very close to the park, in prefabs. I only realised or learned the prefabs, obviously they were built for immediate occupation for people that had been bombed out during the war. Yeah. And I didn't know that the German prisoner of war were the people that actually knocked them together.
Yeah.
So they were very well constructed and stayed up a hell of a lot
Jerry
longer
built.
Than they should have been. They were jerry built, but brilliantly jerry built.
Yeah.
I suppose I should let everybody know that soon became too small for the family.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, a proper Irish family.
A very proper Irish family.
So it was about 1949, wasn't it? So it was kind of just after the war when you were born, John.
Yeah. I was the fifth one and the only boy at that point in 1949. And they since doubled it to 10 siblings altogether. Yeah. And we very quickly moved to a council house in North Manchester, which was fabulous, in a grove. That's to say, it was a dead end, so brilliant for playing out.
Yeah.
No cars. People didn't have cars in their days, did they?
No,
well, one did. Mr. Wynne had a car, but we always let his tyres down, just for the sheer fun of it, because it made a hissing noise. But there, I have very, very, very fond memories of Heaton Park, playing out and travelling to Heaton Park, and particularly where we lived with the cows outside. Literally, it was a farm.
Blakely, North Manchester. And it's only like 3 or 4 miles outside the centre of Manchester, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. Fields and cows and all that kind of stuff right from the...
A tip eventually,
and that was quite fun. Yeah, so early growing up, people would be very surprised to learn, given that there were 10 of us, and the youngest is my brother, and we enjoyed each other's company and played out all the time and rarely had rows. Some of the sisters reminded me only recently they've never had a row with me. So that's on my bucket list.
Yeah, I'm sure there's time yet, isn't there? Yes. No, well, and I mean, the Irishness, really, and kind of you still, so both parents are Irish. And,
yeah.
Tell us a bit about them, John.
Oh, we're absolutely wonderful people. Incredibly hardworking. And my mother used to love singing at the sink, but there was always an interruption from one or other as if somebody wanted this or the other. So I can recall this wonderful song coming out of it, and we all knew the first two or three lines because there was always an interruption and she'd have to sing something entirely differently thereafter. Dad, again, both of them, I'll talk about them as we whiz through the hour, but hasn't it gone fast already?
Well, no, not for me.
Well, they always seem to have at least two or three jobs, as well as being able to somehow manage to deal with this huge family. And they always seem to have time for us, and I have no idea how that miracle happened. They're just both dead now, unfortunately. But they left a phenomenal legacy amongst the family, children, grandchildren, extended family, friends. And they, I know, are very proud, not would be, are very proud of what they achieved.
Yeah, amazing people. Really,
yeah.
And as in your childhood, you said, would you go back to Ireland much in your childhood?
One of the earliest memories, I'll talk about drawing at some point, but one of the earliest memories going across from Liverpool to, I think, Dublin, not even Dunleary in those days, 1955.
Yeah.
And I knew that when I went back to school afterwards and drew this ship, that it didn't look right. Yeah. There was a front three quarters that looked like a shipping, you know, funnels and portholes, all kind of stuff. And then there was a kind of piece of canvas just holding the top bit to another bit on the back.
Right.
Because I was on the back, presumably.
Okay.
Presumably the second class bit with my dad.
Yeah.
And I could see.
That's all you could see.
All of what I could see was being told by a piece of canvas, our bit. And there was a guy kept talking about mustard. And I can't remember saying to my dad, why is he talking about where the mustard station is?
Oh.
No, it's not mustard, son.
Yes.
It's mustard.
It's right. Mustard.
So those kind of very vivid memories came.
Yeah.
This is where we go before we get drowned. I haven't got to Dublin at this point. And we did, and we met our dad's family. And I think Veronica was with us as well at that time. She needs to get a mention. She was the
oldest,
only child.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Or another way of putting it, the eldest of the family.
Yeah.
Well, she relished being the elder child for about 4 years, I think, and then it was all change.
Yeah.
And she's still disappointed. And I remember going in Phoenix Park in Dublin, and I was persuaded that I did really want to ride that horse, which I was scared to death of. Eventually, they bunged us on it.
That sounds and like a treat.
Well, it was a treat getting off. They gave you a cowboy hat and a gun, took a photograph and said, now can I get off? I've still got the photograph.
Oh, very good.
But thereafter, many times, particularly to the west of Ireland, Mayo, Achill Island, I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
And we would be there, I don't know, 4 weeks, 6 weeks. My dad usually spent 2 weeks and had to go back to work.
Yeah.
And a phenomenal place. I'd ask you all to look it up on the map. Achill Island, you can get it online apparently these days.
Yeah.
A real wild, beautiful place.
Yeah, no, it's great. I've been many times myself, great place. Well, part of what we do, as we say, is play some songs. So I think you've picked six songs. I don't know if we're going to have time to get them all in, John, but I think an apt one now is The Women of Ireland by the Chieftains.
Oh, yeah.
You want to say why you picked that one, John?
Well, having mentioned I've got eight sisters and an amazing mother, and I've come across amazing women, and I think this song kind of gives credit to it.
Yeah.
And it also has a melancholy and a determination. And if we had time to play the whole of it, which you might chop some of it off at the end, lovely Boron Baron sound. Boron, Baron, Baron, Boron, whatever it is, Baron, Baron, Boron. And it is what led me to try and pick up the Boron and give it a go.
All right, right. Let's play it and later. Then we'll chat some more about it later. Cheers, John.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Thanks for that, John. It does split, doesn't it? Two bits there, isn't it, that song?
At least two. Yeah, at least two. I remember my dad saying you either listen to music if it's really good or join in or dance.
Yeah.
But don't talk over it.
No, okay.
Which I wasn't very good at, talking over it.
There's a few people we know like that. Yeah. Yeah. Out them sisters.
And before we move on, I'm sure we will move on when I let you. I remember being in a pub in Roscarbury down in Cork. And,
oh, yeah, we know Roscarbury.
Unfortunately, I might have had a drink and joined in with the band. It wasn't just a kind of, you know, help yourself. It was a Nix's Boron.
Yeah.
And then at the end of my evening, this guy said, the guy I'd got the Boron Nick from, said, do you play a lot with bands? You're very good. No, I said, just the Chieftains. Jesus, I knew you were good. Well, I didn't tell him it was a tape at home, but there you go.
Yeah, play along. Yeah. Well, tonight, John, we're going to go to Fagin's Pub in Sheffield. There'll be a session on there. I'm sure there'll be a Boron hanging about.
So oh, dear.
Well, I'll look forward to that later on, right. Maybe. So, yeah, if anyone's in the Sheffield area, get down to Fagin's, listen to me, Uncle John.
God help you.
Yes.
It was a long time ago.
So back to you, John. So really, we've not got very far, and we're quarter of the way through the show. But a big part of your life has been your art and your drawings and paintings and stuff. And we've had some of your art on the walls when I was growing up and stuff. But when did you really kind of first realise your art was a thing for you?
When I was, I told you about that bowling when I was 5 years old, and drawing what I knew to be there, as you think from a kind of symbolism of what a boat ought to look like.
Yeah.
And the teacher at the time, she was really good. I'm 5 year old. And she kept asking about this boat. And I said, well, that's actually exactly what I know. I thought it might sink. And it was telling me about the muster and the mustard station. But that's what it looked like. Anyway, so I always knew just by looking around the class that a lot of them couldn't draw at all, and I couldn't understand why not. You know, I suppose people have a predilection for being able to pick up languages or whatever.
Yeah.
I didn't find any difficulty at all in being able to draw things and draw things accurately into scale with perspective. And then on to, you know, the secondary level, 11 years old, I came across two, anyway, extremely good teachers, art teachers.
Yeah,
Tuesday
at St Clair's.
Yeah, St Clair's in Catholic School, Manchester. Yeah. And they employed the art teachers from Royal College of Art. They weren't commonly garden. Yeah. They were extremely good and young. Thinking about it, probably 21, 22, 23, that kind of age when I was 11. And I'm still in contact with one of them.
Yeah.
Nev Wakeley, he needs to mention. We're absolute genius at being able to get anybody to understand their capabilities and develop them. Anyway, he used to give me a canvas when all of the other kids had bits of paper.
Yeah.
And then he set up an art club. So 3 nights a week, stayed behind after school for 2 hours. And Saturday mornings I'd go to a place in Queen's Park in Manchester. And extra classes there with people like Riley, some of you may have heard of, and a number of other famous people that were famous at the time. And one day when I was, I think, 13, possibly going on 14, Nev Wakeley, the one guy I just mentioned, was doing art classes in the Manchester Art School, evening classes, and they were life drawing classes. He said, would you like to? Oh, yeah, sure. I was really good at still life.
Yeah.
And anyways, right, okay, you come in a wee bit later. I'll just get the class started. And once I've got started, you'd like to join in. So I did. And the lighting was absolutely fabulous. It was, just the subject. I'll come to the subject in a minute, but some of you might have guessed.
Oh, dear.
And set up the easel, and I had a look around, and there was really good bright lights on the subject, and it was a model of a woman, obviously plaster cast.
Oh, right.
And I started drawing, and within very observant, I noticed she'd winked at me.
Okay.
So that was life to her. At the end of that class, I looked round at all of the art students' stuff, and frankly, they weren't up to me.
You were better.
I knew I was better then. None of that modesty, don't forget, although I've got Irish blood, I've been brought up by parents that said, do never put yourself down. Yeah. Always lift yourself up. Lift anybody else at the same time if they need some lift, lift. And that's been a real pleasure. Thereafter, I remember...
So you're saying they wanted to put you up for A-levels when you were really young at art?
Yeah.
Actually,
about the same kind of time, at 14 years of age, they wanted to demonstrate that some of their kids were much better than art school kids. And put us in for A-level, grade A, and which we got. Unfortunately, you had to wait for 2 years till we were 16 instead of the normal 18.
So you did it 2 years early.
Yeah.
Which then got you to an art college near
Manchester. Yeah, it did, near Manchester, in Rochdale. Did 2 years there, not least because that was the done thing. You had to do at least 1 year before you went on to what would be degree equivalent these days.
Yeah.
And if you were young, you're talking about for another year. So I did 2 years there, which were fabulous.
Yeah.
Absolutely, just loved it. Then after that, I remember driving to, in fact, I remember going to the first parents' evening of that, before I'd actually joined Rochdale, with my dad on the number 17 bus.
Yeah.
Purple and cream, I think, if memory serves. You see what I mean? The visual, you pick it up and remember it.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I'm really pleased you're doing what you want to do, but how long will this course be? It's 2 years. And then would you be able to teach? Oh, no, he wouldn't be able to teach then, no. If you went to teach training, you'd have to do another year. So you're going to have to do another. No, I'd have to do the equivalent of a degree, another 3 years. And then would you be able to? No, you'd need to do an extra PGCE, as it would call, or whatever. And he said, well, just whatever you want to do, do it. And that brings on to my dad. He was a phenomenal engineer.
Yeah.
A pattern maker. Some people might, I thought, there were people that made patterns for the dresses that my mother would make for the sisters all the time. She would have forever sewing and making stuff. And I learned a long time afterwards that he was probably as good an engineer as you're ever likely to be.
Yeah.
And he also would wait on in the pub at the evening to make a few bob. He would sell insurance.
Really? Yeah.
He would. They were doing everything all the time. And my mother.
To keep the family centered. Yeah.
To keep us centered and find the money that a family of 12 needed.
Yeah.
So
we're going to come on to what happened next in your life. So a big part of your life was moving to London. So this was basically after you'd done your time at art school in just at Rochdale.
Yeah.
You applied to go to London, but we'll play a song first.
Okay.
So we've got Will You, Will You, Will You. Do you want to say why you picked this one?
Oh, yeah. Well, this is actually what started, I suppose, when I was a kid. Will You, Will You, Will You, down by the River Sawlia. Sawlia's the very small part of Ackle that my mother came from. Yeah. I always assumed it was the River Sawlia.
Yeah.
I'll check out if I'm accurate on that at some point.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was all about camping and singing this song round campfires. And the camping, I haven't been camping for nearly 3 weeks. I just love it. And so this takes me back to all the fun we had and still have when we go camping with some of the huge family.
Well, that's very true, John. I mean, the first time I ever heard this song was it came out of your mouth. You were at camping in Shell Island.
That's
to go to, didn't we? With Rosie and all the family. There'd be like loads of us, wouldn't it, going down there as great as kids. And then you were singing it, and it starts off like a jolly, sweet song, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
Until a few lines in.
Yeah. So well, kids love to be frightened.
We do. You did that for us, John. Thank you. So this is Will You, Will You, Will You.
There was an old woman and she lived in the wood.
Will ya, will ya, will ya?
There was an old woman and she lived in the wood, down by the river Sawyer. She had a baby 3 months old, William Warrior. She had a baby 3 months old, down by the river Sawyer. She had a penknife long and sharp, William Warrior. She had a penknife long and sharp, down by the river Sawyer. She stuck the penknife in the baby's heart, William Warrior. Stuck the penknife in the baby's heart, down by the river Sawyer. There were three lowin' knocks coming knocking on the door, William Warrior. Three lowin' knocks coming knocking on the door, down by the river Sawyer. There were two policemen and a man, William Warrior. Two policemen and a man, down by the river Sawyer. They took her away and they put her into jail, William Warrior. They took her away and they put her into jail, down by the river Sawyer. They put the rope around her neck, William Warrior. They put the rope around her neck, down by the river Sawyer. They pulled the rope and she got hung, William Warrior. Pulled the rope and she got hung, down by the river Sawyer. Well, that was the end of the woman in the wood, William Warrior. And that was the end of the baby too, down by the river Sawyer.
It's a lovely, cheerful song there, yeah, from me, Uncle John. Foot tapping away there. Yeah. Is that, but that, you would, I could see you chuckling away there.
Well, yeah. I'd forgotten that I should have sung that when I was last in Shell Island, trying to be there almost every year since 1970, yeah, since I met Rosie and my wife. And that was August, I'm guessing, August, just after August Bank Holiday. I must put that one back in my repertoire around the campfire.
To scare the kids.
Yeah, scare the kids.
That's lovely. So, back to you again. So, I mean, for me, one of the most interesting parts of your life is your time in London. So let's start from kind of how did you end up in London to start with?
Well, I wanted to go to the Royal College of Art. And I checked with the tutors and that... Royal College of Art tended to take some students from one place and lots of students from others. So you might get four or five get a place of the 30 available,
yeah,
nationally and internationally, and one very occasionally every 10th year from another. And so that was the choice.
Yeah.
I was telling, I was literally down in London yesterday.
Yeah.
I won't bother with, if I'm ever back in Sheffield again, if I live here again,
yeah, yeah,
for another weekend, I might go through some different parts. So I'll move on. I was not just, it wasn't arrogance, it was a self-belief born of the reality.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a case of would I be acceptable, it was is it acceptable for me?
Yeah.
And I'm dyslexic. So I didn't get the grade in English that I needed.
Okay.
And they kept saying, well, what if you, you know, if you...
Yeah.
I said, I'm quite verbose. I know what dyslexic means. I don't know how to... Why did they make it D-Y-S instead of D-I-S, for example? Anyway, so that... I literally was deciding, are they okay for me to go there?
Yeah.
Will they get on with me?
Yeah.
And... So it was taken as a given for me, and I got more work than, you know, I phenomenal amounts of work in a portfolio.
Yeah.
Portfolios, four portfolios.
Yeah.
And I knew that they were going to be lucky to get me. And that is what I'd instilled in the students I've taught many since. Take yourself seriously, believe in yourself, learn the tricks of the trade about whatever, you know, the perspective and how to draw and how light works and how there's a massive psychology in any image. And you're very good. I mean, I go back to that Carly Grove bit where we used to play hide and seek last thing on, at night before, certainly winter nights were brilliant. And some of us were okay hiding for quite a bit, and some of us were absolutely useless. You know, it's a bit like a pair of shoes sticking out from underneath the curtains.
All talking.
All talking at the same time. But this is outside. So I found that because you'd got young siblings, younger siblings, and older ones, that we helped each other out. We'd show people where the best places were to hide, how you hung about for a bit, keeping still. No talking, Margaret, for example. And that kind of love of being able to kind of help people help themselves basically is what stimulated my career thereafter and in London.
So but when you first moved down there, where was you living when you first moved to London?
I first moved down the opposite side of London to where the Art College was, so I didn't go in there very often. That was Kew. And then lived in various other places. That was the first year. With an Alsatian we're frightened to death of, called Hendrix. Gives you the era, doesn't it?
Yeah, old Jimmy.
Anyway, I spent a lot of time in this big garage that we had at the back of that house that we were in, painting on reasonably, what I'd call reasonably good sized canvases, so 6 foot square, a metre or two would not be unusual. And had to paint three or four of them simultaneously with oil paint because it takes time to dry.
Okay.
So moving from one bit to the next bit to the next bit and getting really frustrated about how long the oil paint was taking to dry. Okay. So I didn't go into art college too often in that first year. And I remember them saying, well, we're going to have to see, you know, you don't come in very often. No, it's a long way to travel.
Yeah, and you're doing your own painting. But you weren't skiving, you were actually still doing art.
No, so they said, well, we're going to have a special assessment. And fortunately, one of the friends staying with us had a lorry. And this lorry pulled up for them to have a look at, full of huge paintings.
Your stuff.
Yeah.
Fantastic, yeah.
Yeah. So I just, what you look at life. Anyway, as a consequence, I didn't know I'd met my future wife.
Yes, let's talk about that. Where
Rosie,
to meet her,
in the studio right now with me, and she hasn't interrupted once yet, which is incredible. So 1970 it was. I took her on the first holiday to Ireland, to Achill Island. But that's anyway. We met. I was going out with her flatmate very briefly. I won't bother with her name. It's irrelevant. Oh, no, she was called Katie. I've forgotten now.
Okay.
She pulled me, and I really fancied Rosie, her flatmate. And she said, we meet at a pub. Well, Rosie might want to join in, you know.
Okay.
And I decided that I was going to have... I was going to get married and have grandchildren with Rosie before I'd actually ever gone out with her.
Oh.
And bless me, what a lovely thing to say, but was true.
Yeah.
And I did have a lot of girlfriends and... quite a lot of offers, apparently. But anyway, that's how we met.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. And it's still, so how many years have you been together then?
Well, since 1970.
So
we got married in 76.
Yeah.
That beautiful year, for those people that might be able to remember it.
Yes,
or,
is one of my
or have read
memories.
About it in the books.
One of my earliest memories was your wedding. Yes, what a fantastic night, wasn't it? And you booked a circus for the fair?
No, that was just fortuitous.
Yeah.
We were in this lovely little village in the Cotswolds, and that particular little village or church hadn't had a wedding that year. It didn't have most years, it was tiny. And Rosie's parents, mother particularly, had a lot of contacts there. She was had a lot of family living there. Again, a big family on mother's side. And there just happened to be this thing called the village mop.
Right.
I had no idea what a village mop was. It's a village fairground.
Yeah.
And we were the only... All the village was virtually were at the wedding anyway.
Yeah.
And we were the only people that actually went on all of the rounds. And people like you assumed that there would be a fairground at every wedding you go to.
Fantastic. Right, let's get back to another song. So I think we'll have a little bit of Layla, John. So,
yeah. So, this is the one for Rosie.
Okay.
And what? This was in 1972. I haven't been corrected yet, so it's 72. We went to Greece 6 weeks, I think it was, 5 weeks, 6 weeks. And one of the places was that Rosie had been to an island called Eos, which is probably an island still called Eos today, the year before. And she'd spent a similar kind of time travelling around Greece and hitchhiking around Europe. And it was absolutely beautiful. There was no road. There were no hotels. There was one little shack of a beach hut on the beach. Then a mountain walk to get up to the town to find anywhere that would actually serve you evening meals. And everybody, wherever you went, with all the males, first and third in the household, have the same name. Right. So it might be Spiro in, or Yanis, depending on the island.
Yeah.
And I think it was Yanis. I've got a nod. Yeah. But one of them had a jukebox.
Yeah.
And electricity with lights and things. And he was called, known as Electric Yanis because he's the only one that had any kind of jukebox. And it's all typical Greek music. Why wouldn't it be? And after we'd been there a week, maybe 2 weeks, a guy from America, American vet, bloody hell, a vet at probably 22 years old or something like that, and he'd got this record. And he asked the guy if he could put this on his jukebox, and he put it on, And it was Layla by Derek and the Dominoes, and it was played incessantly thereafter.
That's it.
So, for Rosie.
Let's have a little bit of this.
And one. Lovely memories. So.
Sorry about cutting that short, John.
I'm glad you did because I've got loads to tell you.
We've got 20 minutes left to get in as much as we can.
Right, well, I did mention we're going to have grandkids together.
Yeah.
So I need to mention that before we had the grandkids, we actually had kids.
That's good.
Yeah. Hannah Mae Rocha. That's another lovely story. Don't know where they get...
Just tell us briefly, where did you get the name from? The middle names, wasn't it?
From Aunt Rocha. When I went to Ireland for the first time, when we got to Achill with Rosie, second time, by the way, she didn't know that there were mountains. She just assumed it was all flat and always misty. But anyway, the first time...
There in Achill,
I took her to see and Rosha, and she lived in just down the road, really, well, along the shore, yeah. more accurately. Basically, to go up, come and meet Aunt Rosha. She was just beautiful, and knocked on the door, and had got waist length hair, and she, oh, come in. We had a cup of tea and that, all that. And I told her who I was and who my mother was and what the connection was, and she didn't register any of this. Then eventually she said, well, how did you find my house? And I went through it again. And she said, she rushed off and she took a penny off and she put the teeth in. And there was only one other house within miles, and the woman across there was whizzed in, and she said, oh, this is Ellie's son. This is Ellie's son. And this is his lady. And all of that kind of stuff. And she said, this other woman, I won't bother giving her a name because I can't remember it. She said, hasn't he got half a long hair? So she said, yeah, but didn't the Lord have half a long hair? End of it. Anyway, that's sidetracking too much. I want to come back onto those two children that we had, Hannah May Rosha. Why the Rosha, named after that lady. Hannah May Rosha and Sean Kieran Brendan. And those are my, you know, like you've got real heroes you look up to. It's strange having your children being those, but that's what they have.
That's lovely, yeah. And then they've got the grandkids.
I'm wearing a T-shirt at the moment with two of them on from Hannah and Bob, and that is, if you can see them.
Yeah.
I bet you recognise them.
We do, yes.
And would you be able to name them? Well, not the Christmas tree doesn't count. Amelia and Ethan.
Amelia and Ethan, obviously.
And then Sean married a lovely lady with a name that she doesn't often use.
Caroline.
She calls herself Kaz. She's actually called Caroline. That's the name she doesn't often use. And that's Isla and Ivan.
Yeah,
beautiful. So that's, you know, that's just part of the huge...
They've all got a mention, haven't they?
They've got a mention, yeah.
You've done your job, Dave.
I've done my job,
Well done. Just, I don't talk about sidetracking. I'm going to sidetrack a bit. Because you know, like some stories are kind of, are they true or not?
Yeah.
I heard the story of, was it Grandma cutting off your hair once?
Oh, she'd unfortunately, it wasn't a story. Yeah, she kept trying to persuade me to get my hair cut, and I didn't.
This is in the 60s, and you got your hair.
It wasn't waist length at that; it was barely over the shoulders. And she kept, you know, get your hair. Anyway, one day, I woke up to a very strange sensation with a pair of scissors, and she'd just taken a huge chunk out of the top of the back of the head. And she was apologetic at one and the same time, saying, I told you I would do it. Anyway, I'll make you a cup of tea. And well, you're going to have to get your hair cut now. I said, no, you're right, Mama. I'm going to have to get my hair cut. Yeah, oh, good. Well, I'm thinking of getting, you know, like the Mohican. She said, you can't because it's gone from the top of the middle of the head. No, I'm thinking, let's think negatively.
Yeah, the opposite.
As positively negative we can. Always make it. So we'll take a full stripe out the middle of my head and leave the other two sides. Yeah, so unfortunately, that wasn't a story.
No, that's all true. Good. Well, what I'm going to do, just to move us along, because there's one song that you've picked that I really, really want to make. It's just a great song, and it's got a good story to about. So it's Kilkelly Island, which... it's quite a sad song, but it kind of joins together a few of parts of your life, doesn't it, John?
Yeah, absolutely. This is a guy that we'd known in a different genre, basically. He was an award-winning member of the Achievers, the blues band, some years ago, and they stayed, as bands often still do, passing through on the tour with us. And he was on his own on this particular occasion, playing in a pub in Colne, in Lancashire, called Mojo's. And Paddy Maguire and his lovely wife, Jenna Houston, were hosting it. And he went along, and when we'd gone through what large families were, my mother's one of 13, huge numbers of people and difficult to keep contact, certainly going back to the 50s and 60s era. Most people didn't have phones, and you might get an occasional, well, we usually got an occasional Christmas card, but not from all of them. Yeah. So that contact was very difficult for her to maintain with the siblings in America or even far-flung places like Sheffield, perhaps.
Yeah.
We did have one here.
Yeah.
And Rotherham.
Yeah.
And this is very juxtaposed to the ease with when we had phones and mobile. People still didn't use them, but during the pandemic, that was our treat on a Saturday, all of us, very close as siblings still, to get together. And have a, you know, just be ourselves and have fun for that time in the pandemic. And this, I was telling Steve about this on our way over to Mojo's to his playing his gig about what the pandemic had done positively.
Yeah.
And he said it reminds me of this song. So you might know from the introduction, this is a live version of that particular night, him. I've never heard the song before, and he hadn't played it for over 20 years.
Yeah.
This is just beautiful and tells the tale of so many of the Irish community in that generation. Absolutely, perfectly.
Beautiful song. And you get a mention at the beginning, don't you, John?
I do, yeah.
Song since I was about 19. John's requested it. John and I were talking over the way here about his Irish heritage and how he keeps in touch with his eight siblings, sisters and brother, but how the generation above that would have kept in touch maybe every 10 years or so with a letter. And it reminded me of this song. This song was written by a chap called Jimmy Keane, an American songwriter. He moved into a house in Massachusetts, and in the loft he found a stack of letters. And the letters were to a man called John, who emigrated from Kilkelly in Ireland to America. And the letters were from his father back in Kilkelly. And they were sent every 10 years or so, and they told the family news. And the first letter starts in 1860, and it goes through to the 1890s. And it just tells the story of the time. It's a perfect folk song in that respect. And it's quite sad, but it's also quite hopeful at times. And yes, this is the first time I've played this for 20 plus years. So I'll see if I can. I've got the words here. I'll see if I can figure it out. If I fluff any of it, apologies. We'll see how we get on. Kilkelly Island, 1860, my dear and loving son John. Your good friend the schoolmaster Pat McNamara, good to write these words down. Your brothers have all gone to find work in England. The house is so empty and sad. The crop of potatoes are sorely infected. A third to half of them gone bad. Your sister Bridget and Patrick O'Donnell are going to be married in June. Your mother says not to work on the railroad, be sure to come on home soon. Kilkelly Island, 1870, my dear and loving son John. Hello to your missus and to your four children. May they grow healthy and strong. And Michael has got in a wee bit of trouble. I suppose that he'll never learn. Because of the dampness, there's no turf to speak of. And now we have nothing to burn. And Bridget is happy, you named a child for her, and now she's got six of her own. You say you found work, but you don't say what kind, or when you'll be coming on home. Kilkelly Island, 18 and 18, Michael and John, my sons. I'm sorry to give you the very sad news that dear old mother has gone. We buried her down at the church in Kilkelly. Your brothers and Bridget were there. Don't have to worry, she died very quickly. Remember her in your prayers. And it's so good to hear that Michael's returning with money he's sure to buy some land. The crop has been poor and the people are selling for any price that they can. Kilkelly Island, 18 and 19, my dear and loving son John. I guess that I must be now close to 80. It's 30 years since you've gone. Because of all the money you sent me, I'm living out here on my own. Michael has built himself a fine house, and Bridget's daughters have grown. And thank you for sending your family picture. They're lovely young women and men. You say that you might even come for a visit. What a joy to see you again. Kilkelly Island, 18 and 92, my dear brother John. Sorry I didn't write sooner to tell you that father passed on. He was living with Bridget. She said he was cheerful and healthy right until the end. You should have seen him playing with the grandchildren of Pat McNamara, your friend. And we buried him down alongside mother at the Kilkelly churchyard. He was such a strong and feisty old man, considering his life was so hard. And it's funny the way he kept talking about you. He called out for you at the end. Why don't you think about coming to visit? We'd all love to see you again. Thank you.
Beautiful, beautiful, wonderful.
Thank you.
I think you can hear John there saying beautiful, live on the show.
Yes,
usual. So that's Steve Fabracci's version of Kilkenny Island. And we class him as a friend, isn't he? So is he
very much so.
So part of what you and Rose have been doing for a number of years now is being big on the blues scene in the north. And you have lots of band members stay at your house. And
when I was in London, having done the first 2 years in Rochdale, and after the first 2 years in London art school, I became the full-time president for a year.
Yeah.
And when I finished the final year, the year afterwards, I became a full-time president for a further 2 years, so 3 years in all.
Students' Union. Students'
Union,
so part of that was...
So there was national politics, local politics, all kinds of student-level politics.
Yeah, yeah, which would have been a lot bigger back in that sort of 70s, isn't it?
Yeah, and we were very fortunate to be able to have a reasonable-sized budget, four huge halls, relatively.
Yeah.
And no competition. You know, there weren't the O2s and the big, you know, bands, rock bands or whatever, weren't allowed in all kinds of places. You just wouldn't find them. The Rolling Stones would find it very difficult to play. So we put on lots and lots of bands, Pink Floyd, The Kinks, Love, Jefferson Airport, etc. Lots and lots and lots of bands.
Yeah.
And
I mean, huge
Rosie,
bands, like the biggest bands in the world.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah.
And Rosie is basically very similarly, you know, there's another show, maybe another time, wait till she's Irish. And because she's already lived in Sheffield with me for that same week, And that's kind of continued. But just finishing off on that last song, it's absolutely beautiful, and it will mean so much to so many people of the older generation particularly. But it tells us there's no excuse for not picking up the phone or getting on WhatsApp or some other kind of, and actually having a conversation with people.
Yeah.
We have, having talked about that 1 hour we used to do, we have lots of family apps, you will know.
Yeah.
There's some that just their cousins. First cousins all have their own separate apps. There is a wider family.
Yeah. It's a lot easier
just
now,
the siblings.
To that. I mean, that's the moral. So my sister's in Australia.
Yeah.
And, it's a lot easier than old John writing back to Kilkenny, wasn't it? Back
absolutely.
In, so we should do more. And it's easier to do.
I haven't sent a message to your sister for about 4 or 5 days,
that's it. It was her birthday, wasn't it? And it's
that's
your birthday.
What I mean.
Your birthday coming up soon, Uncle John?
Yeah, it is, all too soon,
So we've only got 2 minutes left.
Right.
So we're not going to have time for any more songs.
Oh, dear.
But so we just really wanted to kind of talk about your life. So you basically, you're in London, and I suppose it's in the 70s, you bought a house in London.
Yeah.
From your jobs as working was it a lecturer in London?
No, I was a lecturer in London,
And
then a senior lecturer in London, started as a registrar in London.
So you were able to buy a house,
bought a house at 25.
Yeah.
Which
is not possible these days.
Not at all. You've got to be kidding. You think I'm making it up. And thereafter in Preston, very senior management, and I always kept my hand in the teaching bit. I always insisted, regardless of whatever else I did, travels, and I'll do one Wednesday at least per week, Wednesday morning, pushing that capability of people believing in themselves and drawing, real skill, back to that life drawing thing
I bet you was a great lecturer. I'd have liked to have been in one of your lectures, John.
You would have loved to have been in my lecture. And I used to say to people, even if you've come to the wrong, you know, if you think you're going to do psychology or you think it's, you believe in yourself, you can.
That's it. It's all right, John. So, no, well, I mean, it's been absolutely brilliant. I'm so pleased that you were passing through Sheffield this Wednesday night. Very fortunate, weren't we?
Nice life, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. So it's been a wonderful hour. Thank you, John.
I've always wanted to be on Desert Island Disc, but I now always want to be on Deserted Island Disc, especially when you've just sneaked under the wire to be able to get away with it. Thank you so much, Ben.
No, thank you. I don't know what that other show is you're on about.
Well,
but anyway, next week we've got a special guest on Deserted Island Disc, so everyone else, just enjoy your evening and have a great night.